are.
I'm back.
Yeah.
Thanks to Rick and Mark for filling in while I had a little things to take care of back in the home front. But as usual, you are back live with Romeo Charlie Reality Check. And tonight, you know, we're going to go around and introduce everybody. And, you know, for the newer audience, what we're going to do is we're going to give a little, like, you know, 30,000 foot overview of who we are. But one thing I really do want to tell you tonight is what I want everybody to get out of it, including myself. I always want to learn is I want to learn what it's like to teach someone or to be someone that's going to go and buy their first firearm or their 50th. There's a lot of things I want to buy. I want to buy like class, whatever. And that's one thing I have Lou on tonight. And we have Lou on tonight. Let's go around the room. Hey, first, I am Jason Piccolo. I am a current Fed LEO. I've been a special agent, Border Patrol agent. I've been with numerous different agencies. And I was an enlisted guy in the Army in the 90s. I commissioned as an infantry officer later on. And then I did a tour in Iraq in 06. And subsequently before that, it was 05, 06 was my full inactive or individual ready reserve recall. Thank you, President Bush. Yeah. So back then, I want to give that. And then I also teach a bunch of college, and I host the Protectors Podcast. Let's go to Rick next.
Rick. Man, so Rick Hogg, I'm a 29-year U.S. Army Special Operations Combat Veteran. I'm also the owner president of War Hog Tactical, co-host for On the Range Podcast, and the founder of the In Honor of Duco Project, where we help out SOF K9 handlers so they never make a medical decision about their canines based on their finances.
I am Mark Kelly. I'm the owner. I'm not the president yet. I don't call myself the president. I'm working up to that. Chief financial officer, meaning I'm paying for everything. But yeah, Mark Kelly, owner of Kelly Defense. I'm also a former military guy, U.S. Army combat veteran. I'm a 29-year major city law enforcement officer and a tactical officer. We'll get into some of that a little bit later, but that's me in a nutshell, bro.
And one person I want to introduce tonight is Lou. Lou is a fellow East Coaster, but he also has a storied career in the ATF. He also has a book out right now called Storefront Sting.
Nice.
An ATF agent's life undercover. Look at him. Lou, what's going on? How you doing? Let's get a bit of 30,000 foot overview of who you are.
What's up, brother? Hey, thank you guys for having me, man. It's an honor and a privilege. Thank you. My name is Lou Velozzi, and I'm a retired ATF agent. I started my career back in 91 out in Los Angeles as a special agent with INS, Immigration Naturalization Service, and kind of started working gangs out there. And, you know, I was just fascinated with it, and I wanted to work undercover, but a whole lot of opportunities in INS for big Italian guy to work undercover. So, you know, I was on a LAPD ATF INS task force. I started working with the ATF guys, and I was like, man, these are the cowboys. These are the guys doing the undercover. They're always in the mix. And, so it took me some years, but I was able to work my way over to ATF. And, I worked undercover for about 18 years straight, and, wrote a book when I retired, Storefront Sting, an ATF agent's life undercover. And it just got optioned by a big Hollywood company. So they're wanting to make a Netflix series. Yeah.
Good for you, buddy.
Thank you.
You have to find a big Italian guy for that. Okay. So before we get into the good stuff, who do you want to play Lou? Who's your character that would play Lou?
Oh, you asking me?
Yeah. I want to know who you think should play the Hollywood edition of Lou Velozzi.
Joe Pesci's too short and old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've had people suggest a guy. His name is Joe Manganiello. He's married to to Sofia Vergara.
Oh yeah.
Oh. What nice.
Good for him.
Good. Yeah. Well done. Yeah.
So Lou, I'm gonna throw something your way, buddy.
Go
so
ahead,
let's think about this, man. Audie Murphy as Audie Murphy into Hell and Back. Be yourself. You want the part, man. Wouldn't that be cool? I mean, heck, if Audie Murphy can pull it off, come on. Lou can pull it off.
Oh, brother. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be I don't want to be rich and famous. I just want to be rich. So, because I've been at this for 4 years, brother, and dealing with these Hollywood people.
Nobody's
written me a check yet, man.
Dude, yeah.
But a lot of promises.
Wait till if you wind up on set. Oh my God, man, it is a total culture shock. You'll sit there and go, "What in the high holy hell is going on?" It is just a weird dynamic. Very odd. So
now the proposals that you've been getting, the offers, is it for like a series, or is it for like just a feature length film, or is it, you know, an idea that's going to become a like a streaming service series, like The Terminal List with Jack Carr?
It's for a like a Netflix series.
Nice.
And so they just made a movie called The Survivor, which just came on HBO Max. He's a Jewish boxer who was in.
Yeah.
They just, and now they're trying to focus on my book next.
Nice. That's what I'm talking about.
Like I said, a lot of promises, you know.
Okay, so let's get right into it. And I promised that we would talk about the basic. I mean, I wanted this to be like completely basic. Later on in the conversation, we'll talk about, you know, the class, whatever it is, because I don't even know the classes. I should know this stuff. But I'm a 20-year-old kid. Let's go with 21 so we could buy a handgun, right? And remember, everybody with this is all based on your laws. You know, check out your laws, check out, you know, your local jurisdictions, check out everything you need to do legally before you go in and buy it. But I want to buy something. My dad had a shotgun. I never held a gun before. And I want to go in and I want to buy a pistol. Very first time. I'm a 21-year-old guy, medium build, but I have no idea what the hell I'm doing. What's the first thing we do? I mean, obviously before researching where we're going to go. And we can talk about that too.
I think the first thing that comes to my mind is what are you going to use it for? What are you going to do with it? Are you going to, you're going to plink with it, or using it for self-defense, both? Is it going to be a rifle? Is it going to be a handgun? That kind of thing. What are you going to do first? Because there are some considerations when you make that decision. If it's going to be a handgun for self-defense and, you know, enjoying your recreational shooting, you know, price, finding out as much as you can about the type of gun you want to get, because let's face it, and Rick, you can help me out with this a little bit, but most of your modern day handguns, center fire guns from a reputable manufacturer, they're all very similar. Mm-hmm. Now there are going to be things that certain folks like yourself or me are going to be looking for, anybody on this panel, but we've been around the firearm business for a while. We've been carrying them for a living for a long time, but the finding out as much as you can and what you're going to use it for, I think is probably a good place to start.
Yeah, I agree with you, Mark. The other thing I would say is, you know, do your research, do your homework. If you've got friends, family, whatever, that have certain ones that you're looking at, you know, if you can try them. I know there's gun ranges that have indoor, or there's gun stores that have indoor ranges that will actually let you try it before you buy it. You know, that's a good way to sit there and go, hey, man, does this thing fit? Or I go, hey, I'm like Lou and have big old hands, and then all of a sudden go, hey, I want this, you know, Glock 26. And next, you know, I got like a finger on it and it's not working for me.
Right.
So definitely want to try it before you buy it, because I think there can be some dramas if you don't. And then just try to educate yourself, you know, like you said, what you're looking for, and just kind of take it from there.
Yeah. Getting as many guns in your hands as you can. Like you said, these big box store indoor ranges, you can go and rent them. You know, you get a 4-hour pass to go out there, or an hour pass to shoot up. They'll let you shoot all their guns that they have and just get a lot of different guns in your hand. That's a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, under that scenario, Jason, that you painted out, I would say the first thing you should do if you're not familiar with guns is learn how to shoot, take a class. You know, or if you have a mentor, if you have a relative, uncle, or someone who can show you, maybe someone hopefully who's in law enforcement who can, you know, show you. If not, take a class. Learn how to safely handle a firearm first before you go buy one. You know, don't learn as you go, you know, after you've bought the gun and you're trying to carry it. You know, learn first, then you get a little experience and then go buy a gun. Maybe you might out. You like a revolver better than us, you know. So I would get in a class or find someone, family or friend, who's into guns, who can show you the ropes.
That's a damn good idea. You know that? Because, mm-hmm. you know, YouTube is my friend, but YouTube can also have some crazy advice. But find someone local, and I'd like the idea of taking a basic pistol course. And I've mentioned this before, I think in one of our last discussions, is like, in order for me to become an instructor to teach CCW stuff out here, I had to go through the NRA basic course. And mm-hmm. in that course was like, so many people have never held a gun before. They have never touched a gun before. But with today's environment and everything, they're like, you know what, maybe I'll go and check it out and see if it's something I need to do. And there was a lot of people who were like, hey, you know what? I don't know what to buy. They've always been told to buy a revolver. But by the time they get into that course and by the time they do a little round table, people are like, maybe a revolver is not where I'm at. So excellent advice, Lou, is find a training, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's tough to find training right now, but it's out there.
Yeah.
Well, you got to find training that's specific to that new firearms owner, right? So if you wind up going to one of these gee whiz bang classes and you don't even know what you're doing, it may not suit. So you got to find, again, a class that specifically tailored towards the first time firearms owner or first time user.
Yeah. If you, my suggestion is, you know, look around and find either a former military or former law enforcement man or woman who's now retired and running a class that puts a little tactical aspect into it, as opposed to, you know, going and just plinking from the various yardage at a target. You know, learn how to really shoot. Mm-hmm.
Mark, you're muted.
The gun advocate. Yeah, I didn't want to snotball over with you guys talking, but the you know, the NRA and some of these CCA and all these other folks, they don't only have like a basic shooter course, they have a basic safety class that involves zero shooting. So you can even start there if someone's not comfortable with handling a firearm with someone they don't know. I think a family member or a friend who's law enforcement, military, is great place to start. But they have those just at home safety with firearms. They used to be geared towards, you know, teens and stuff like that who are getting interested in guns and just to keep everybody safe. But what a great place to start, and a very good point.
There's plenty of training out there. So we know, hey, train. Get to know it, familiarize yourself. And, you know, don't feel, and that's one thing I really, really want to stress in this conversation is, if you've never, like, we've been around guns forever, and so many people probably watching us or listening to it later on in podcast form have probably been around guns. But the thing is, getting the nerve to go to get the training, to showing up. Remember, these people who are the instructors want you to learn. They want you to be safe. They want you to be one of the people they go to the range with and not feel like they're going to get shot. Because we all know, if you've gone to a gun range, and you could go and rent a gun. We know, we've seen people rent a gun, have no idea what they're doing. They get it. They get like a 1 minute saying, hey, point it down range. Don't shoot anybody else. And they're all over the place. They don't want those people there. So if you're an instructor, they're going to welcome you in. And when you're do your due diligence, when you're finding someone to teach you, look at their background, you know, make sure that they are vetted. Make sure they're not like that crazy dude out of Detroit that's doing all that. You know who I'm talking about. Everybody knows who I'm talking about, that guy. But make sure you're vetted. So, okay, we're trained, we're ready to go. And we're like, okay, I know what I want, kind of, you know, do what I want to buy, a revolver, a pistol, this and that and everything. You're going to figure that out with the training. But when you first walk into a gun shop, I would say do your due diligence with that as well. Do your research, check their reviews, check and find out if they're going to be comfortable enough to sell you the thing that you need. And not as if you're, let's say you're a 22-year-old female, just got done, you know how to shoot, you're good to go, you know you want to go in there, and you know you want to buy a Walther or a Glock or whatever, or like Pete said, the Toyota Corolla of handguns, the Glock 19. Let's say you want to roll in there and you want to buy a Glock 19, and you're dead set on that Glock 19, you've shot it at the range, you're good to go, and the first thing you do is you pop through that door, and you got that 50-something-year-old guy, nothing against us and the late 40s and 50s, but nay, you have that guy. And that guy's like, hey, you know what? You don't need a Glock 19. You need a 38. Mm-hmm. How do you approach that? And how do you stand up for yourself? I mean, and remember, this is a basic. I'll go Rick. Rick knows what he's talking about at 29. Yeah,
but see, here's the thing, right? It's no different. It's like the used car salesman. If you're going there to get car X, he's going to try to sell you car Y. But if you already go, no, I want this one because I've done my research, done whatever. Hey, thank you for your advice. I mean, you can be courteous to the guy. Hey, thank you, but no, I'm going to go with this one here. Shot it before, looked at it, like the review, whatever your pitch is. But at the end of the day, you're a customer. So,
yeah,
gun shops will try to push some things. I'm not going to say they won't, right? But at the end of the day, you're the customer. You've got cash in hand. But I would rewind the tape just a little bit, Jason, before you even go to that step, make sure that you've done your due diligence for your state. So, for example, in the state of North Carolina, you just can't go to the gun store and purchase a pistol. So, unfortunately, we still have old Jim Crow laws on the books that our governor vetoed. That's right, Governor Cooper. So, watch yourself, buddy. You're going to get chopped. That's my First Amendment right. I can say what I want. But he vetoed us to go back off of some old Jim Crow laws. But in the state of North Carolina, you need to get a pistol purchase permit from your county sheriff. And again, that takes time. So, unless you've got your North Carolina concealed carry, then, you know, you don't have to. But the point being, you could be that guy that's ready to go in there, purchase your pistol, and go, all right, here we go. And they're going to say, at least for North Carolina, hey, where's your pistol purchase permit? I don't have one. Now you just wasted, you know, to me, time, your number one most precious commodity. Now I got to turn around. All right, what's the process to do that? Figure that piece out. So just make sure you're doing your legality check prior to whatever state you're in. I mean, Lou can probably tell you, New York, best of luck to you. Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Yeah. Massachusetts. Best of luck to you.
Yeah.
You know, California. Hey, best of luck to you. I don't even know where to start with that stuff, but you guys are going to have some definite, more hurdles, and you may not get what you want, you know, in some of those states. If it is not that state compliant, I don't care what you want. You potentially may not get it. So just be aware of that when you go in there.
Yeah, it's good advice.
You know, those big, when you go to those gun stores, we all know that guy, you know what I mean? And Rick's right. You are the customer. I think the confidence for someone who's getting into that genre is going to come from the training, like Lou said. It's going to come from the research, like, you know, Jason was saying. It's going to come with that confidence, handling firearms, getting the training, and then knowing exactly what you want by that point. And then you just go in there and you make the purchase no matter what. You know, we know those guys. God love them. You know, they probably do a lot of good than they do bad, but we know that stereotype about the folks who are selling guns, you know.
Yeah. It should be an educated purchase. In my opinion, your first gun, you should already know what you want. If you've taken a course, if you've shot some guns, you know, ask your friends, family, whoever, and you should know what you want when you walk in that store. Because if, you know, the young person who goes into a gun store and says to the salesman or whoever, you know, what do you think I should buy? They're going to unload whatever they've had trouble unloading, right? They see someone who's new. That's like you said, the car salesman thing. You're so right with that. So, you know, be educated, be an educated consumer and know exactly what you want, right? If it's a Sig Sauer P65, that's what you want. You know, don't go in there and be talked out of that. Be an educated consumer, man. You know, guns are no different than any other commodity you're buying. They're certainly not cheap these days. And you got to be happy with it, right? It's got to be a good fit. It's got to work for you. So,
You know, that's one thing I've been using too is an FFL. I found someone who works out of their house. You know, they have the P.O. box, they have everything set up. And I pick out what I want. I either order it direct from the company or I order it direct from gun broker or I go here and there and I find it and I transfer it to his FFL. Mm-hmm. They do all my paperwork right there in their house, relaxed, we're chilled. There's no salesman or anything because they're going to get their cut. They're going to get their $35, $50 for the transfer and then they're going to get their whatever 10% over what they're doing. That's another way to look at it as well. There's a lot of different ways to purchase a firearm that are outside of, you know, just going to a shop. Do you guys have any experience with working with FFLs direct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's the easiest way to do it, right? So, you know, when was the last time Rick bought a gun? I don't know. When was the last time Rick got a gun? Yeah, you know, I mean, just being an honest broker. And typically that's just the manufacturer. Hey, what FFL you want to send it to? And it goes to a gun shop, right? Because I've got a relationship with those guys. I can also get my NFA items dealt there. So it's just easy one-stop shop. I know all those guys, but that's super easy. So you just show up. I still have to abide by the state laws, right? So I still show my concealed carry permit because that negates them having to do the background check or pistol purchase permit, all that stuff. And it's like, yep, there's my North Carolina concealed carry. Here's my ID, picture ID, of course. And then, yeah, go about your business. I'm not paying no, what'd you say, $35-$50 FFL transfer? Mm-hmm. Poof. Yeah. I talked to you about
savages, man.
Yeah, I'd say, hey, man.
Okay, listen, I don't want to tell you the Piccolo doesn't pay the $35-$40.
Oh, okay.
It's usually like, hey, Jason, come on in. Yeah. Typically, my FFL is like only like 20. It depends on it. I'm just saying, in general, they could charge you $35-$50.
Sure.
Yeah, lot too.
And and that's the thing about finding a good FFL. Who buys just one gun anymore? I mean, eventually, nobody. Let's say you buy the pistol, mm-hmm. and then you go on, you buy the rifle, you buy this, you buy that. And that's one thing I want to talk about. First-time gun owners, you're going to buy a pistol. Let's say you buy a 9mm, you buy a 38, you buy a 45, nobody's buying 40 anymore. Let's talk about like something that nobody ever talks about is like ammo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, practice ammo versus, you know, carry ammo versus sell home defense ammo. If you're going out there and you're practicing, let's say with a 9mm and you got like 124 grain, and then all of a sudden you're like, you know, you're loading up with the plus P, like 5 million grain ammo. I mean, let's talk about that. Practice with, you know, at least practice a little bit with what you're going to carry that thing with.
100%, Jason. And here's the other thing, Lou, not to cut you off, but don't forget, all your engagements aren't going to happen during the day. Make sure you're out testing, if you want to say, your self-defense ammo. If you can get indoor ranges are great because you can dim the lights, right? Or if you've got a range, you can go at nighttime. You don't have to blaze a whole bunch, but get a couple rounds down through there and go, hey, is this thing flashing in my face? And go, probably not the best choice. Or if I'm going to do that, have a couple different manufacturers just to test it out. Hey, am I going Federal or Winchester or whoever? And just go, man, that thing barks like a dog, and I really don't want to deal with that at night. So, sorry, Lou, I know I cut you off. I'll let you go.
Yeah, no, I was just going to add to what Jason was saying about, you know, you definitely have to practice with what you carry. But, man, these days, you better get a second job because ammunition, it's out of control. I've never seen anything like it, man. I went to Ace Hardware. Well, I was just going to buy some. I went to Ace Hardware. And I would have had to take in like a second mortgage on my house to buy a box of 9mm ammo from Ace. Unbelievable the prices.
So, Lou, I know a guy that can hook a brother up. So let's sidebar chat after this.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, that's, you know, if you know someone and if you find a good, reputable reloader or something for training.
Oh, man.
Become friends with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'll throw this out there, Jason, you know. There's a gentleman out there that I'm dealing with that he specifically is a reserve officer, but he's got a ammo distribution company. His main focus is LEOs. Whether you're active or retired, he wants to put bullets in cops' hands so they can train. So just make the connection, go, hey, man, you know, there you guys go. You take it from there. But let's think about it. And Lou's hitting a critical point when you're looking at your ammo. This is where, you know, the dry fire piece has to come in, because a lot of gun owners, they don't dry fire. Mm-hmm. And this day and age, unless, you know, like Lou's saying, you've got a second mortgage out on that house just to afford your ammo to go train. Right. You need to train, but you better be doing something with that firearm so that you're comfortable with it. And it's not always shooting bullets. So,
yeah. You know, that's a, Lou, you bring up a good point. You know, price is a consideration, not only because it's difficult to afford for many people, but you're not only going to need the handgun. You're going to need ammo to practice. You're going to need ammo to carry. You're going to need carry ammo that you can practice with. You're going to need a holster. You're going to have a solid belt. You're going to have a safe. You're going to have to, you know, maybe you're going to spend money for training. So you can't go out and buy a Ferrari if you can't afford to put gas in it, right? So people, it like I said, the modern day handgun, many of them, you know, I don't care what major manufacturer that you're talking about, and even some of these other ones that are coming up that are really good stuff, they're going to be solid. So you may have to, price is definitely a consideration because you want to be able to train. Great point, Lou. Great point.
And let's talk about the different things out there. You know, SIG had the most hellacious PR campaign in the past few years. I mean, I'm looking at three or four SIGs in my house right now. You know, the 365, the 320 Compact, the 320 Legion X5.
There's your target audience right there.
I know. I'm like, you know, you get one, you got to mess around. And then you start modifying them. But, you know, and, you know, being a Fed, Glock 19, for how many years I carry that thing? I still got a Glock 19. But the thing is, buy something you could afford. It doesn't have to be the fancy-dancy this, that, and everything with red dots and all that. Buy something that you could train with. If you want to upgrade later on, feel free. Glocks are Glocks. Glocks have been Glocks forever. They do the, they, you point them in the right direction. You pull the trigger, fires, you know, you throw them in the mud. oh, there we go. And everybody's jumping on the Walther. You know, Walther just came out.
It's the only handgun he has, by the way. It's the only one he has.
Only one. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that his Glock?
No, it's my Walther PDP. And it was funny. It was funny. Some guy wearing this jacket, one of them little windbreakers that said ATF on the back, just pulled it out and said, "Hey, dude, here, take this." And I was like, "Oh, okay, cool, thanks."
No, I'm really digging the new lines of Walther. Let's talk about Walther. What's going on with that?
As far as the PDP, so here we go. So this is their compact version.
Make sure I unload that thing. I'd hate to see one of these like
really. Boom. Look at here, Jack Holes. I know the status of my firearm, okay? Treat all firearms if they're loaded. However, know the status. It's been unloaded. Duh. Listen here, Johnny.
I had to anyway, throw that out there.
Yeah.
That would have been the most classic thing ever at all. Oh, I'm sorry. God.
Watch this. Ooh, are we live right now? Oh, but gee. I meant to do that. No, that's their PDP. So that's their latest pistol they got going on out there. So this is the compact model. You know, it's 15 round mag. Their full size one, I think, is 17. So obviously the butt's a little longer. I think it goes out to about 5 inches out in the front. And then they just came out with, so you talk about handguns and stuff, their PDPF for females. So they specifically designed smaller frame, everything to, you know, kind of fit the ladies' hands better and all that other stuff. So, you know, from the Walther side, it's like, okay, cool. Who else is kind of driving guns towards the ladies? I don't know of anybody else. Mm. So
I think Smith has one that they kind of geared Smith and Wesson.
Well, just paint it pink, but did they actually do anything to the ergonomics of it?
I know they didn't specifically address, but I know the action, everything is a lot smoother. The
okay.
I can't remember which one, MP or one of those handgun models.
Yeah. Well, they, you know, Walther just did the, they just launched the, or they're getting ready to launch the PDPF, you know, for the females. So, I guess at some point they'll probably do the PDP U and X. not quite sure what the U and X means, but.
Well, you know. of course they would. Why wouldn't they?
Yeah. Well, the woke crowd's going to come after Walther for doing that.
Yeah. It is an untapped demographic that you know, the firearms industry hasn't really tapped in yet. I think it's brilliant.
There is, and that's what we're talking about right now, is there is different ammo. You know, you have the full metal jackets, you have hollow points, you have different grains, different power that goes behind the projectile. There are little different things. So what I would say is, you know, after this show, we're not going to get into the ballistics right now, because everybody can say, hey, I need a 45, it's going to stop a bear. 10 millimeter this, 10 millimeter that, 357. Yeah. But I would really say is check out the different types of ammos out there. Look, YouTube, ballistics, YouTube.
Stop, Jason. You're killing me. So Imperial Girl, check it out. Go to Warhog Tactical on YouTube.
Oh, right? There you go. What am I talking about?
And we've got a comparison. It's kind of bare bones basic, but as far as Full Metal Jacket compared to a hollow point, because listen, you don't want to buy Full Metal Jacket for your self-protection. And I'll let the Ballistic Gelatin do the talk and watch the video, but all the info's there without burning time here during the show. So,
well, I'm going to drop a link in here to your website. But one thing I do is I wanted to pause right now because we have we do have a special guest. We're used to just bullshitting, but Lou, the book. Let's talk about Store for a Sting. And I've worked UC creep crap back in the day with Haida. Mark has Delta is basically, I mean, Delta. I mean, so it's all UC. I mean, basically. So Lou, let's talk about the book.
Yeah, it kind of covers what it's based around are the storefront operations that I did, that I kind of specialized in at the end of my career. You know, I was running around doing every kind of undercover work that was available to me. I did the bikers. I did two outlaw biker gang infiltrations. I did a bunch of murder for hires, just general street gang infiltrations. And, you know, the nickel and dime, you know, gun and dope buys, just informant meets, all that. And I did a mafia infiltration up in Chicago. And I got a call one day from a guy who said, hey, the local police up here in Augusta, Georgia, just flipped a guy. He doesn't want to go back to prison. He's a tattoo artist. And they want to do a storefront, but they need an undercover. And I said, okay, I'm in. I didn't even know what a storefront was, really. And, you know, they were opening up a tattoo shop. So I didn't know what to expect, but I cleared my schedule. I rolled up there, and it was a learning experience. You know, the Richmond County Sheriff's Office, that's a police in Augusta, Georgia, did an incredible job. The ATF guys up there, you know, jumped in and helped out with everything. And I went in there kind of as the manager of this tattoo shop, the nightmare, but it was really good. He had inked all these guys. And, you know, I don't know if you guys have ever been to Augusta, but you see all the pageantry and the, you know, the beauty on the golf course during Masters and all that, but the city is a shithole, man. Gang infested shithole. So, you know, they wanted to do something about the gang. There was home carjackings, armed robberies, just out of. So I went up there really not knowing what to expect, just running my usual hustle that I, you know, that I bought guns cheap in the South and I ran them up to New York, sold them to my mobster buddies and made money. I had moving trucks, you know, with people's furniture in it. And I showed them how I would secrete the guns in the furniture. So if I got pulled over, I could say, hey, you know, Johnny Law, man, I'm just driving, moving people's shit. I don't look inside it. You know, and they liked that hustle. So we slowly built up trust in the community. And fast forward 12 months later, and we had bought 430 crime guns off the streets of Augusta, Georgia, and all the dope we could afford. You know, we didn't even want dope, but we were just buying it if we had extra money for it. So, you know, ATF had never really seen those kind of results in that kind of time period, right? 12 months, 430 crime guns, over 100 defendants. And these were convicted felon gang members. And I was like, man, we're onto something here. So the book takes the evolution of the storefront. I didn't invent storefronts. ATF didn't invent storefronts for sure. But what we did was I took these storefronts and I evolved them. And by my last storefront, I did four of them, and I also participated in probably 25 more around the country. By my last one, I had taken it from kind of that street game into, I was an international freight forwarder on the ports, and we were infiltrating organized crime, Bolivian gun traffickers, all sorts of, you know, we're getting RICO statutes, criminal conspiracies. We just kind of stepped the game up. Our third storefront we did here in Georgia was actually a military surplus store with an attached shooting range. So we had gangsters coming in on film, you know, shooting their stolen guns in our shooting range, all on video. So we definitely turned it up for each one. And that's what the book is based around, is the evolution of those storefronts.
That's pretty cool, man. I just started it, and I'm on page like 25 now. Got plenty to go. But we drop links, and yeah, you can get, and I'm looking at your website now too. It's like you can order signed copies.
Yeah, you know, the what went on in these storefronts is just, you know, it's never been told before. It's just unbelievable. There were, you know, so we had all these gangs coming in, and it was inevitable that they would clash. And we had just fist fights, all out brawls. We were burglarized. We were robbed. Just massive drug deals that we didn't even set up taking place in front of us. All this crazy shit went down. And, you know, somehow we were able to hold it together. And, you know, we bought over 1,000 crime guns during those four storefronts that we did here in Georgia.
When you're working UC and stuff like that, and that's the thing is, like, when I was working, like, in the groups that did it, I wasn't the actual undercover, but I was in the undercover groups. And you never know, like, when you're doing a takedowns, San Diego's a big place, but it's not big. Augusta's not a huge place. What's your life like outside of there? I mean, are you moving, like, 45 minutes away? Are you moving, like, an hour away? You never know when you're going to run in.
Yeah, you know, we did them all differently. There were times when we stayed at hotels outside of the city. You know, there were times where we rented houses, undercover houses. You know, and the undercovers, we would stay in these houses, and even, you know, they were all wired up for sound in case something. But we tried never to do anything outside of the storefront. So we always stayed close by, and lived in some sort of undercover setup, usually an apartment or a house, sometimes even hotels.
Yeah, it must be.
Everything had to be done pretty much by scratch from the beginning, right? Because it's not the usual, like, police operation where you can pull strings and pull favors. Because if you did any of that and the word got out, you might as well not even do it. So Sal Nunziato, that was my undercover identity, I had to go out, actually find a place, right? Commercial real estate, get a broker. You know, go through all the interviews and talk to the landlord and actually rent a place all in my undercover ID and deal with the fire marshal, code enforcement, the local cops, all that shit. It was a tremendous amount of work on the front end to set these things up because it all had to be done from scratch.
You know, you touched on a little bit how challenging, and this is just a question from a little bit of experience, how challenging was it to keep this under wraps, even though you're always going to need the local PD. I get that. But how difficult was it? We're using task force officers that were embedded already. And, you know, most of the time the inquiries, as you know, come from the top and they get offended when they don't know.
Yep. So incredibly difficult, brother. Incredibly. So what we would do, usually the only people that would know was the chief of police or the sheriff. It was a sheriff's department. And the three or four investigators who were assigned, that's it. We would not even tell the agents in our office where the location was, the other agents who weren't involved. Like, that's how tight we kept it. Because you guys all know cops talk more than anybody else. Bunch of gossipy bitches.
Oh, my God.
You guys know that. So.
Oh, my God.
It's terrible. Yeah. So, you know, we had to keep it so tight because after putting in all that work, right, on the front end and finally getting in with the criminal community and it starts rolling, the last thing you want is to have to shut down because someone was running their suckle too much and, you know, and you got blown out of the water. You know, informants, we were very tight. We used informants in some of these. Some we didn't. Some we did cold, which was difficult. But, you know, we had to keep the informants really tight. Under wraps as well, and you guys know how difficult that can be. But you know, we knocked it out, man. You know, we always these operations have a shelf life, and you always know toward the end, you know, you might have gotten burglarized a bunch of times, robbed. Like I said, you know, eviction notices. You got code enforcement breathing down your neck. The local police, we were harassed by the locals. They thought we were scumbags. And, you know, and the guys working with us couldn't help us. So, you know when it's time to pull the plug, right? Hey, man, we got 300 guns off the street, crime guns. You know, we've wrapped up 95 defendants. Let's pull it before something bad happens. You know, and it's always around that 12-month mark. You know, you don't want to push it.
So, Lou, I got a quick question for you, man. You brought up an interesting point, the Bolivian gun smugglers there. So do you know, were they getting their guns from the military?
These guys were not.
Okay.
It was funny that their gun smuggling operation was kind of a side gig for them. They were making their big money off of stolen cars. They had the biggest.
Really?
Yeah, these guys had the biggest stolen car ring on the Eastern Seaboard. And it started in New York, where they had members of their organization embedded at Lexus dealerships all over the New York City area. And what they would do is if Jason Piccolo went in to buy a $80,000 Lexus SUV, and he drives that car home. He lives in Brooklyn Heights or wherever and parks it in his driveway. They were just cloning the key. They would clone the key fob, and another, it would get passed off to another member who would go to Jason's driveway at night, chirp, and get in, drive it to a chop shop. They had chop shops set up in Jersey. And then it would go down to Hilton Head, South Carolina, where they had people at a DMV. And the guy explained it to me. He said, you know, like in a country like Bolivia, 98% of the people are dirt poor. 2% are richer beyond all your wildest dreams. So Lexus doesn't have Lexus dealerships in Bolivia because 98% of the people aren't buying a Lexus. So that 2%, they'll pay $500,000 for that SUV. So really, I mean, it was all profit to them. Their only expense and only hassle was getting the cars from A to B. So the gun thing that they were moving, they were doing it mostly through straw purchasers. And it was mostly ARs. And a lot of them, they were converting. A lot of them were below.
No, the only reason I ask, because when I was, I did a lot of work down, you know, current narcotic stuff down in Bolivia. And down at Chimaray, the commander there, because he had access to helos, somehow scooped up a bunch of their government guns, got them on the birds. And we think that the pilots were shady as well, flying coca pastes, you know, into Santa Cruz. It's just it's a shoddy deal, right? Because like you said, when you got dirt poor people, even if you're in the military, they're still not getting paid that good. So when I sit there and go, man, here's a duffel bag full of money, you know, turn a blind eye or fly these duffel bags there. Oh yeah, sure. Yeah. Chuck them in. You know, so that's why I asked you, and when you brought that up, I was curious. And then I was going to kind of ask time frame, because again, it is just an interesting dynamic down there when you look at from the dirt farmer who's actually just growing the coca leaf to how this thing gets processed to all the other stuff from A to B to get product to the state. So
yeah. And it's interesting that, you know, all you guys have brought up that very point, that all these other enterprises and all these other folks who are involved to make this get to the end user, the person who's purchasing the stolen item, the BMV guys, the shipping involved, and all these other scams, the employees in the stores itself, the people who are taking them, all those things are just falling into place. Did you have time to prosecute a lot of those other pieces in the network that made that operation make it to the end point?
So me personally, no, I did not. You know, I would run the undercover portion and blow out of town, and I was on to the next one. But they were followed up on, you know, and a lot of it was thanks to Nibin. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Nibin.
Oh, yeah.
So because of Nibin, you know, I'd buy a stolen gun from some guy who we knew was affiliated with the Mexican mafia, right? And all of a sudden, you know, we would run the gun through Nibin and say, hey, man, this gun was used in an armed robbery in, you know, in Fort Lauderdale 12 months ago. And so, you know, though that Nibin generates really good leads. So, you know, now you have someone who can take the ball and run with it. You know, as an undercover guy, that wasn't part of my gig. But to answer your question, yes, it was all followed up on, you know, straw purchasers, people who were involved in the logistics part. That was all followed up on. Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's a lot to it. Yeah. I was just, go ahead, Mark. I was just thinking about, like, I'm looking at the book and I'm like, storefront. And, you know, the first thing that pops in my mind, and it's like, you know, just a storefront. If I'm looking at this book, it's like, okay, what are they doing? It's like a pawn shop. But when you brought up the, like, you know, the gun stores, the gun this, and all the other different venues where you could sell, that's pretty neat. I'm actually excited to read it now. I'm like, as I first started, I'm like, oh, we got a lot of similarities, you know, INS, and then, you know, the Marshalls thing too, and all this other stuff. I think you should check out the book, and, you know, you can go to your website. Can you get it on Amazon as well?
It's best to go on Amazon. Yeah. If you just Google Storefront Sting and Amazon, the Amazon link will come right up. Come off that $19.99. I promise it's a good, fast read. And, people seem to love it. You know, I basically wrote it the way I'm talking to you guys right now. That's how I wanted it to sound. It's not a hero story. You know, I don't drive away, you know, on my Harley into the sunset at the end. My career didn't end well. Wasn't a happy ending. I made mistakes. And I don't shy from any of that. I don't hide from it.
I was laughing because that's a story for another day for another show called The Protectors. But, you know, the bureaucracy, the government, and everything that goes along with it, it's touchy, and we've all been there, definitely. One question before we move on from the book is, like, were you like a gun guy before you going into the ATF?
No. So before I got hired, as a special agent with INS when I was 22. So I had never even held a gun in my life. And, you know, I learned at FLETC at the academy. And then, you know, I was never a range guy, and I never enjoyed it. It was always something I had to do until a guy who got hired shortly after me, his name was Rick Register, and incredible shooter. And he was an SRT guy. He was a SWAT guy. And he just happened to be in my office. So he's covered me on a million deals. But he's the one who made me realize how important tactics were as an undercover, and trained me in undercover situations, and made me realize that, you know what? If you train right, if you train often and train right, when the shit hits the fan, and it did, you're just going to do naturally what you've been trained to do. And, you know, once he got a hold of me, you know, going to the range wasn't something I had to do anymore. You know, it was something I wanted to do. And, you know, everyone should have a Rick Register in their life. You know, every law enforcement or military guy who can show you the importance of it. And, you know, sure as shit, when the time comes, you're real glad for that person when you got to use it. Mm-hmm.
Hey, Lou, just one quick question on the book. Did you self-publish through Amazon?
No. A publisher, I have a literary agent, and he was real good. A publisher picked it up right away. And then it sold before the book even came out on Amazon. It sold to that Hollywood company for the Netflix series. So nice. I've been fortunate. It's a unique story. You know, no one's ever written about these operations. No one knows about them. And it really is, when you think about it, it's set up perfectly for a Netflix series. Different storefronts, different cast, you know, I use different undercovers, different bad guys, obviously, you know, different bosses. So each storefront could be a different season.
Nice.
Very good. Now let's get into some ATF specific questions here. Because we know basic firearms. We know how to go there and buy it now. And if we don't, we're going to go to Rick's website. We're going to go to Mark, and they're going to help us out. And if you're local in Nova, here in Northern Virginia, I am also teaching basic firearm safety and basic stuff on a need, like a personal basis. But hey, you know what? I love guns. I mean, you look around my studio, there's guns everywhere. All legal, by the way, all legal. But let's say I don't have any, you know, for me personally, I've bought my 50th gun, but I don't have any suppressors or silencers or anything like that. Maybe I want to buy a machine gun. what's the deal? Come on, let's talk about this.
So I'm going to go right to Lou. Hey, man, what's up with the NFA department and taking forever to process? Right now, now I'm going to caveat this. I haven't done it yet because I haven't had a need yet. But supposedly, the e-forms are supposed to expedite.
Yep.
But come on, man. When I buy three separate, as you guys call them, silencers, nice verbiage, by the way.
I said suppressors. Is that silencers?
No. ATF refers to them as silencers. Silencers. You use the proper verbiage there.
That's right.
So since we have Lou, I don't want to insult him, but I'll use his own words because it's best to use their own verbiage, right? And I'm not beating up on you, buddy. But so I bought three silencers at the same time, submitted all the tax stamps at the same time. Do you think they all came back at the same time? No. So it just, I would just caution people. And if you've got any insight, I'd love to hear it. But when it comes to NFA or National Firearms Act, which would be your short barrel rifles, your silencers, or your machine guns, you know, there's a delay in getting it. So don't think you're just going to walk in there, buy your first handgun with a threaded barrel and think you're going to slap your silencer on there, because that thing will be potentially in ATF jail for a year plus. But do you have any insight on that, brother?
It's purgatory.
Mm-hmm.
The term we use for it. Well, here's the deal. And I have so many buddies and people complain to me about it. First of all, I'll say I was an undercover guy. I had nothing to do with the NFA branch at all. And I'll also say this. ATF is like every other agency. Jason, you're well aware of this. So probably 10% of the agency does 90% of the work. Mm-hmm. All right. And like other agencies, there are people who shouldn't be there, who probably have very different views than the four of us have, and who don't want the general public and law-abiding citizens necessarily armed with machine guns and silencers and all that, which, you know, you shouldn't be working for the agency if that's your mindset, in my mm-hmm. opinion. But I think that might play a little bit into it. I will say in the last few years, COVID absolutely has destroyed, you know, the speed of the NFA branch. You know, for a while they were working from home and the backlog was out of control. So, you know, there's probably been a good 2.5 years where an already slow system has gotten just out of control slow.
But I think, Lou, here's my thing. Right. If Rick were to go up there and just look at how the system works.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if you're going to do a NICS check on me, boom, you plug my name in and you're getting information. Right. If I've already put the process in at some point, where's the delay? And I guarantee if you sit there and dig at
okay,
it.
Okay. Lou, you know what? I'm going to give Lou a break on this one. Seeing well, as
no, I'm not saying.
Lou, no, Lou's no. What I'm just saying, I'll explain it to you right now. It's called bureaucracy.
Yeah,
you have a special agent over here, 1811. They're out there doing the undercover work. They're doing mm-hmm. this. They're doing that. And then you have management program analysts. You have different types of people doing different types of jobs. And you know, me being when I was with DHS, you know, everybody lumped everything into ICE. But ICE had a Homeland Security investigations, and they had enforcement removal operations who did all immigration.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just so much bureaucracy, and there's so many steps. And, you know, what I would do is I would go to the ATF, and I would lean out these processes. I would be like, okay, take away too many. There's too many steps. And I'm hoping this electronic thing they have going now is because I've been a year in purgatory.
Yep. So the electronic, that I've heard nothing but good things. And I think for me, and again, not beating up on Lou, but where it chaps me is Uncle Sugar, each one of those items, you want 200 bones that you're more than willing to cash that check almost right from the get-go, right?
Instantly.
So you've taken my money,
yep.
And I'm sitting there as the consumer going, you spent my money. And mm-hmm. I'm sitting here going, I need a stamp. Yep. I mean, I can't run to the post office and get one. I just need the stamp. That's it. Just, yep. you know, and... That's SOT. The whole process.
Well, you know, I guarantee you one thing, Rick. The four of us could start a company and go to the NFA branch and get a contract and privatize it and have it running so smoothly, and people would be getting their tax stamps within 30 days, all right, of us depositing that $200 check.
Yeah.
Because the government is inefficient. What can I mean, that's across the board. Unfortunately, it's not just the ATF NFA branch. It's across the board. I've been dealing with the U.S. Copyright Office on an issue with my book. And
I've had to deal
In 243 days when I finally get out of this mess, I'll give you guys a, you know, because one of my main, and this is getting out of the side of the firearms thing, but one of my responsibilities and one of my jobs was to lean things out, lean Six Sigma stuff, to take processes and improve them. And one of them was taking a hiring process that was from like 9 months to a year to get it down in 90 days. We can knock this a lot. And a lot of things with the paper thing is you would have a paper copy coming in for a stamp. We take 50,000 processes. Now you have the electronic one. These people who are still working at home with COVID can still process this quote unquote paperwork.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we're starting that business 244 days. It's going to be a good one. We're going to,
I guarantee you the four of us could do better than a couple hundred people at that NFA branch. I guarantee it.
That many works up there?
Oh yeah.
Oh God.
Wow.
Contractors, full timers. Yeah.
Well, nobody wants to answer the phone. And again, I'm not throwing you under the bus because it's
they only got two phones.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. 400 people and two phones.
So I did the, I did my tax stamp and it finally got processed in March of last year, and it didn't get processed. It's just pending still. And I did that whole fancy silencer company or one of those places where they have the electronic one. I did that. I took my picture, did everything. And I called 2 weeks ago, and it's before I even talked to Lou, before I throw Lou under the bus. Cause I know the deal. It's not Lou's fault, but it's like, it's pending. So everybody out there, what we're trying to say is, expect to be disappointed and just expect that it's going to take a long time. I want to really buy a short barrel rifle, and that's kind of my next thing. And now that eventually I'll get this can, and it's going to be awesome.
I wouldn't buy one.
Really? You're just going to go?
I'd form one. No, I don't buy the pistol. I'm not going to get into that. Right. Cause we've got an ATF guy here. So I'll just keep my mouth shut, but
yeah,
I'd just form one lower. So just take one of your lowers, form one it, but why buy an SBR?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To me, it's just, hey, this is my registered lower. Stick whatever barrel length you want on there.
Yeah, true. Hey,
Lou, am I correct?
I mean, yeah.
I don't want to be violating the law.
Well, you know, so all these SBR variants, that were coming out, and there was a lot of confusion because ATF has a bad habit of making decisions and then going back and changing the decisions they made when they do their classifications. So, Rick, I'm in 100% agreement with you that if you want an SBR, that's the way to do it.
Hmm. Just make sure you remember which one. If you've got multiple, make sure you know which one it is.
Yeah.
Mark's been quiet down there. He's like, I don't know if I should talk.
Yeah, Mark's got about 100 of them probably in his closet right now.
Not 100.
No. only 99.
Right.
And this guy just pulled up at the house. You know, some shoddy old station wagon, but he had this cool jacket that said ATF in the back. So, hey, man, you want some of these? I'm like, sure.
I thought it was legit. Yeah.
Hey, he had
thought it was
jacket.
Santa. That's it, man.
Yeah.
Well, we're gonna probably start wrapping it up now. Everybody, you know, we are all available, and you know, Lou's book is going to be a really insightful. I'm glad I really appreciate you sending it out here. And actually, I think I bought this one. I think I bought this myself. I don't even know. Anyway, it's not signed, but I need a signed copy eventually. One thing is, you know, and we don't sell fear. We're never going to sell fear on here. We're selling something that's called being prepared and being knowledgeable. And that's, hopefully you get something about that when you come to the show. This is our third episode, and we plan to do this every Monday as long as we can. If you have any ideas for next week's discussion, feel free to drop comments. Follow everybody on social media, especially Lou. Let's build up that social media profile. Lou's got like, we need to get like 1,000 followers by tomorrow. Let's do it.
Yeah, that would be chill. Nice. Not my strong point, brother.
I know. It's and we all talk about that every time.
Lou, do you have a website?
I do. Yep. LouVelozzi.com. Yep.
Nice. Do you have a newsletter on there? Do you send out newsletters?
I don't. Brother, I can barely turn a computer on and off.
Hey, man, I'm with you. The only reason I say that, right? So, you know, to Jason's point, the followers are cool. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But when somebody, you know, because here's the problem with the followers. Again, another unregulated industry. We've got bots and all kinds of other rubbish jumping in, jumping out. So the thing is, if you sit there and go, come to my website and sign up for my newsletter, to me, that's just a little more solidifying that, hey, I've got a potential customer that's either going to buy the book, you know, service I'm providing, whatever the case may be. So just food for thought on that. So if you sit there and go, hey, man, we're running a book sale, right? Or, hey, they're normally, and again, I'm not speaking for you, but they're normally $19.95, but, you know, this week I'm doing special autograph, whatever, you know, something like that. But I'd rather give it to the people that come to my or sign up for my newsletter, because then I know, hey, you're actually interested in what I have to put out or my information versus just being on the social side. So
totally. Yeah, that's a great idea. I got to go.
Now you're on mute.
Now you're muted.
I'm professional podcaster, Jason Picklum. Yeah, we're going to be putting out a lot more stuff on our other platforms about marketing and being an older person like us all post 40, a lot closer 29. To 50. But you know 29. What? 29 years in Special Operations Forces. Now, but one thing I do want to say is make sure you do check out everybody's respective websites and everything. We are going to have a lot of training available. And a lot of stuff you could find is already out there. Rick already has it. Mark already has it. And if you ever have questions, just ping us. Same thing. I'm going to put Lou's book up here, Storefront Sting, ATF Agents Life Undercover. It's really interesting. And now I'm going to have to read the whole damn thing because I'm like, this is a damn good book. Lou, I'm looking forward to having it on my show. I'm sure it'll probably be on the On the Range podcast as well.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Because here's the thing, Lou. It just you going through the process. Think about how much more you know about business, just business aspect, than your average people, right? Because you had to live it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that in itself is mind-boggling. I mean, you could literally go out there and just sell your expertise on how to set a business up, let alone, you know, all the ATF work you're doing. I mean, that's just incredible. And then having to go from city to city and, all right, here we go. We'll start from square one again. All right, where's this best building we're looking for? The cheapest one I can find.
Yeah.
There was as much work in the setup as there was actually doing the undercover. It was especially the freight forwarding thing. We had a 50,000 square foot warehouse. We had multiple forklifts going. We had shit coming in and out. We had a courier business to Columbia where we actually delivered people's shit to Columbia. we had a tobacco import export warehouse that was bonded in there. And we had a freight forwarding company. So that we had shit was just, and it was all bullshit, but shit, we had shit moving in and out all the time. And I had to learn all the lingo because when I started talking to these guys, like, you better know the customs forms. You better know the terminology. You know, you better have all the computer systems set up, which we did, tracking ships and their locations and all that. So the learning curve just for that part was ridiculous, man.
Dude, that's awesome, though, because here's the deal. When we opt to go international with our products, I'm calling you.
Bingo.
Yeah.
We'll get them there. Yep.
Yeah, man. They'll be sliding no extra stuff in there. You know what I'm saying?
So, let's go around here. Right. Rick, where are we going to find you at?
Warhog, warhog.com. That's good. That's your one-stop shop for everything.
Yeah.
Mark Kelly,
Kelly Defense, K-E-L-L-E-Y, defense.com, and On the Range Podcast. Lou, appreciate you joining Romeo Charlie, because I know how there's a lot of pressure into making that happen, not wasting everybody's time and money. And those are huge logistical nightmares, getting everybody in the same room, or at least the people that need to be, to put all that together. So congratulations on that, your career and this book. Really appreciate you being here, pal. That was unbelievable.
Thank you so much, brother. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and everybody, make sure you pick up the book. I dropped links everywhere for it. You can go to Lou Veloze.
That's an awesome character name, man.
That's you a don't great even, name. That's the protagonist name right there. Everybody, make sure you head over and subscribe to all the podcasts, like the Protectors podcast with Jason Piccolo. And tune in next Monday, 7 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.